Hello and welcome to the Coaching in Education podcast, brought to you by Growth Coaching International. I'm your host, Richard Reid, and today we're exploring an inspiring leadership journey in education with our special guests, Louise Rose and Di Henning. Louise, an award-winning educator and current principal at Brooks High School in Tasmania, shares her transformative journey from a highly successful early teaching career focused on personal achievement to a deep commitment to leadership grounded in coaching, emotional intelligence and trust. Alongside her today is Di Henning, an experienced educational leader and long-standing team member here at GCI, whose mentorship played a pivotal role in Louise's professional growth. In today's episode, we'll hear all about Louise's evolution as a leader, explore how she and Di have strengthened the leadership team at Brooks High, and discuss their leadership way of being document, an approach they've developed to foster trust, self-awareness, and a coaching culture within the school community. This episode offers valuable insights for anyone passionate about the impact of coaching in educational leadership. Louise and Di, I'm genuinely delighted to have you both join me on the podcast today.
It's great to be here, Richard. Thank you.
Looking forward to this.
I am looking forward to this as well. Louise, your early career was filled with many accolades as a science teacher. You won awards. You were recognised state and nationally for student achievement and for your teaching abilities. However, during our planning meeting for this podcast, you shared that your focus at that time was very much on your own personal success. Tell us a bit more about that period in your career.
Look, I loved teaching and spending time with young people, seeing the shining eyes of my students when they were totally engaged and excited about their learning was just so awe-inspiring. I would spend hours and hours preparing fun, motivating, interesting experiences, you know, to really hook my kids into learning. To be fair, I was a bit of a drama queen. Sometimes I think I should have been a drama teacher. I would tell science through stories and drama. In the early 2000s, I delivered workshops at both state and national conferences with my students around scientific literacy, which is really the knowing science as a way of thinking. I was teaching then at a lovely little school, Exeter High School, a rural school outside the city of Launceston. We had about 100 students per grade. At that time, I was offering a science extension program, which had never been offered at the school before, and it was just for 9-10 students. In my last few years at Exeter, the class became so popular, we had to run two classes of 20 students. And this is quite a feat when you think you're up against, you know, MDT, cooking, drama, dance. A big part of that program was students carrying out their own investigations, you know, using the scientific method and writing reports on their findings. My students won state competitions and at national level with BHP. So it will be fair to say back at that time when I was in my early and mid-30s, I did have a bit of an ego. I was really proud of my achievements and those of my students, and I enjoyed the fruits of that labour.
Yeah, it's a fantastic start, Louise. In the midst of your success in those early years, and it's lovely to hear about that, you applied for your first leadership roles. We're going back to 2002. However, the outcome wasn't exactly what you'd hoped for. So at the time, you received some helpful feedback from then current principal, Di Henning, who was the panel chair. In your own words, Di's comments were a bit of a wake-up call. Can you share with us how Di helped you see, I suppose, your practice differently?
This was without doubt the single biggest aha moment of my 36-year career. I remember it so distinctly as it was such a pivotal moment of change in my thinking. It created such turbulence in my brain and completely rewired the way I worked and thought. You know, moving from being a great science teacher who delivered great student outcomes to then becoming a science leader who began working with others to build their capacity so they too could have an impact on their students. So to provide some context, Di was a very highly regarded and excellent principal of a big city high school in Launceston. To be fair, I was quite in awe of her. She was a very formidable presence and someone who I aspired to be. I had begun applying for middle leader positions and I'd received several interviews, but in Di's school I didn't. And I'm thinking, what's that about? You know, I couldn't understand that. So I rang Di and I asked her for some feedback. Now, conveniently, Di lived really close to the school I was working in, and so we made time to meet after school. Now, Di didn't mince words. She was such a straight talker and she had such a no-nonsense approach. In a nutshell, she said to me, you are a leader, but you do not understand leadership. I was completely baffled. I didn't have a context or a framework to hang that from. She then said to me, you need to learn how to build the capacity of others. And she gave me the title of two books, which are still on my shelf, covered with dirt and love and coffee stains. The first one was Linda Lambert's Building Leadership Capacity in Schools. And the second one was John Maxwell's The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. What I didn't do was sulk, you know. She gave me some pretty harsh messages. I listened and I took on the feedback, purchasing the books and reading them, as I said, cover to cover. As a result, 12 months later, I won my first leadership position in a big city school. And some of my key takeouts from that were that, you know, leadership is influence. That as leaders, we learn to work through others and we lead by making others powerful, which is a real shift for me. People's capacity to achieve is determined by a leader's ability to empower, and that leadership is about learning together and constructing meaning and knowledge, both collectively and collaboratively. So then in 2004, I won my first middle leader's position.
Fantastic, fantastic. It's been an interesting initial start to your journey from, I suppose, that, you know, success in the classroom, and I suppose being inspired by, you know, working so closely with your young people and seeing them achieve great things. And then I love that phrase, Louise, you talked about, not mincing her words, and was very straight and open with you, which I think, like, probably looking back now was very, very helpful. But as lovely as you didn't sulk, which was just terrific, you know, amazing. You took it on, you took the information on board and thought, you know what, I'm going to do something useful with this. So Di, whenever you think back all of those years, and we're going back quite a few years here, can you share what you saw in Louise during those initial conversations and why you felt compelled to give her that candid advice on leadership?
Well, I want to preface some things about Louise, but there are a couple of other beliefs I've had. When you think about it, when people enter into a school, everybody enters equally. You know, when they come as a grad, we don't have kind of a gate that says, oh, you'll be on a leadership journey and you'll be on, you know, the teacher journey only and not progress beyond that. Everybody comes in. And so when you're the leader of a school, you know, you're providing, there are opportunities for people to become teacher leaders. And so, you know, effective principals, I believe, are actually noticing the capacities that, you know, are there within people and enabling those opportunities, you know, to emerge. And I always had that view, and that it was the role of principals to really encourage and support the next generation of leaders. So whenever I led a panel, I always, in the communication one gave to people who weren't successful, and, you know, was that feedback was available because I saw it as part of my role. But of course, sometimes people didn't avail themselves of that opportunity. So when somebody like Louise contacted me and said, look, I want the feedback, then that was also showing something about them as potential leaders. And then that's what, you know, galvanized me to want to go that extra mile and, you know, spend a bit of time after school talking to somebody who is showing that level of interest. Another thing I think that's important to know is I never expected anybody would begin leadership like fully, you know, applying for their first role like a fully developed leader. You know, you would have enough to show that you had the indicators of what you could be. And that's what, you know, that's what I focused on. But what I truly saw in her through what she did present was that she had a huge range of qualities that were significant for leadership. She was committed and passionate and ambitious, but in the service of her students, not ambitious for personal gain. There was no hubris and there was no ego. And I could see that. She wanted her students to be successful, and they all reveled in that success and enjoyment of science. I could see also that she was an intelligent and curious thinker, and that she had the capacity to engage others. She had a warm heart. And who wouldn't want to own their stuff? But in a merit-based, you know, selection process, that's, you know, that's why she wasn't successful. But at part, so I, you know, then reached out, and that's how we got to this point. But the qualities she possessed needed to be directed towards leadership, at what it meant to be a leader. And that's what she needed to explore. So I did my best to point her in a useful direction so that she would begin to see that her role was beyond that of the teacher of a subject, that she needed to be able to see the bigger picture, you know, and what the other dimensions of being a leader in a school were about.
Yeah, it's lovely to hear that, Di. And you know, picking up on a few things you're saying, you used the word noticing, you know, so you noticed these strengths in Louise, which maybe even at the time she didn't even notice herself, which I think is quite fascinating. But the interesting thing is, Louise, you actively asked for the feedback. And I mentioned, you know, being on the panel and being on a number of panels, quite often people, yeah, don't ask for the feedback. But you were actively asking for the feedback, which, as Di has mentioned, is again a good early indicator of a leader, you know, somebody who actively asks for feedback. And I think that's a really helpful thing for folks who are listening in to this episode, particularly those who are either leaders or maybe those who are aspiring leaders. That idea of actively seeking feedback is part of being a good leader. A few years later, round about 07-08, Louise, you completed the coaching accreditation program with Di. At that stage, she was a facilitator then with GCI. What impact did this have on you?
Oh, here we go. This was the second biggest aha moment of my career. I always seem to involve Di. That's two ticks, Di. So in essence, the growth coaching framework, it gave me the language to work with others as well as the way of being needed to build trust. You know, being a coach is more than just being a leader. It is more than having excellent interpersonal skills and high emotional intelligence. It's actually about believing in others and supporting them through conversation to be their best versions of themselves. It's about asking the right questions to get people to think differently. So I remember distinctly Di talking about appreciative inquiry, and I learned to come from that stance and to truly believe in the wonderful phrase, which I use over and over again, unconditional positive regard. Coaching is about supporting personal growth of our people. And I believe I'm a leader who has embraced coaching, you know, that is to make your staff the product of your focused attention and concentration. It's to be utterly sincere and authentic. Like, people can see through fake so quickly. You know, it's to be a listener and to seek to understand. My principal back then in 2007, he said to me, Louise, we have two ears and one mouth for a reason, because I was always a little bit of a talker. So that really stayed with me. And I still, once again, I use that phrase today. So the growth model gave me the skills needed to initiate challenging, difficult conversations as well. You know, as leaders, this is essential to growing, you know, a positive school culture. Behaviour we walk past and let go is a behaviour we condone. So the growth coaching not only gave me several sets of skills. So in essence, doing the accreditation, it transformed my way of being. It made me a better listener, made me aware of my body language and my attitude, and it made me quieter. As a leader, I know I have a vivacious energy and enthusiasm. I'm a joyful person who laughs a lot and has a lot of fun. I'm naturally noisy. When you coach others, your focus turns to them. And you go inward. So for me, it's a bit like going into a zone. Everything in me stills, becomes more hushed. It helped me become better at noticing, at paraphrasing, becoming skillful in asking right questions. It just completely transformed me as a leader.
That's fantastic. And then there's a number of things in there I'm jotting away here as you speak, Louise. But the very first thing you say there is that framework gave me the language to become a great leader, and the vocabulary to use. And I love that. I love that phrase where you talk about, you know, behavior and challenging things. You know, when you walk past, you know, a particular behavior and you don't do anything about it, you're condoning that, you know, and it's giving you, I suppose, this confidence, maybe would be the right word.
Yes.
To develop as a leader. But in many ways, those strengths that Di noticed in you in the early days that you were able to show in the classroom, you were then turning those strengths towards, I suppose, colleagues and the other adults then in the school building. So the qualities were always there. It was just the focus was turned towards the adults rather than the actual students. There was a period then, and I find this fascinating, there was a period then of around about 16 years, okay, where you and I then really only crossed paths about a handful of times. Give us an overview of what was going on between then and now, because we're going to follow up now with the latter part of the story. But during that period of 16 years, what was happening with you during those years, Louise?
Oh, we lived on the East Coast with my young family from 2007 to 2015. It was a glorious time. We had a home by the beach. I taught at the local district high school. You know, there were no traffic lights. You know, and I had two sons at going to the school also. Living in a rural small community, it was such a joy from being in Launceston. You know, they were such precious years. You become part of the community, and I have such a fondness for that time. I had several middle leader positions, and I did a stint at St Helens as acting principal for nearly 2 years. And it was during this time, these 16 years, that I embedded what I learned. I thickened it. I fattened it, for want of a better phrase. So I embedded the qualities and characters that made me a good leader. I knew how to build leadership capacity by using the language of coaching, and I became consciously competent as a coach. So that language was just in me then, and it was a coach by default, was the way I phrase I'd use that. And I gave myself permission to be true to myself. I'd been told so many times I was too much, too bold, too loud, too passionate, too visionary. And it was through those early coaching conversations that helped me be accepting and comfortable in leading from the heart and leading from where I stood. She gave me, or helped give me, a renewed sense of my own capacity and the permission to be comfortable with who the leader I was, and to be accepting of others. For me to be accepting of others as leaders, I needed to first be accepting of myself. So I honed my skills during this time. I became savvy at reading situations, became skilled at having hard conversations, and I became really discerning by learning to understand people. I developed a deep, deep understanding of the importance of the human side of leadership. So when you truly understand your people, when you build strong relationships with them through the doing, through the work, and you invest in them, when you create a positive and supportive environment, you get it back in spades. You get back loyalty, creativity, and commitment to the purpose. You know, one of my favourite phrases is self-esteem is the lifeblood of performance. You know, when we feel valued and supported and know it's okay to make mistakes, we create an environment where our staff feel free that they can innovate. So I left the coast in 2015 for family reasons. You know, my sons needed to come back to the city for work opportunities. And I was blessed then to be transferred to Brooks High School, and I started there in 2016. So from 2016 to 2023, I enjoyed 7 of the most wonderful years at Brooks as the AP, working with an amazing and very experienced principal and a fantastic staff. And under our shared leadership, it would be fair to say that Brooks flourished.
It's a lovely period of time in there over that, 15, 16 years. But a key word you've mentioned there, Louise, is that idea of embedding what you had learned. So we've had two aha moments, you know, where the penny has dropped, light bulb moments, tied in with Dai's interaction. And then there was a good long solid period of really embedding, I suppose, that learning that Dai had passed on to you, which was just terrific. And I love your honesty. You know, people were saying I was too much, too bold, too passionate, but yet and withal, Dai had given you, I suppose, you know, the opportunity to use the word, give yourself permission to be the leader that you actually were, you know. And I mean, just talking today, you know, that passion comes through very, very clearly. Right back from the early days, the passion for the young people in the classroom, and the results are there. And then when you move towards looking at middle leadership and senior leadership, that passion is still there. And I obviously noticed that in those early days. Louise, you took over then as acting principal in January of this year, so recording this 2024, having been assistant principal, as you told us, at Brooks since 2016. Now, at the end of 2023, so last year, when the previous principal retired, Brooks High was recognised statewide as one of the most improved schools in Tasmania over a 5-year period. What was in the forefront of your mind at this time?
That Brooks High is a gift.
Mm.
It is a school that experiences significant disadvantage. There are so many barriers to student success. You know, we are sitting in the bottom ninth percentile of Australia for educational disadvantage, yet we were named up as one of the most improved schools in Tasmania at the end of last year. You know, our young people have so much to overcome just to get to school every day, not the least of which is generational and situational poverty, homelessness, exposure to domestic violence, trauma, and limited access to services. And many of our students that experience low expectations of education at home and very limited support for further education are just not valued as much in low demographic communities. So Brooks had experienced, you know, 7 years of stability with the same principal and two APs. Together, the three of us had over 100 years in education and 70 years in leadership, and a very experienced principal who had been so successful in leading three different schools, and one who was expert in building trust and harnessing positivity. You know, she had two key mantras when it came to Brooks: hire for character and train for skill, and put the right people on the right seats of the bus. She believed right down to her stocking feet that I was the right person to take Brooks to the next level, and that it was the right time for her to retire, and that we had the right people who were ready to support me in their leadership roles. So I found myself in deep reflection in a period of significant leadership transition. I had an entirely new-look leadership team, two new, young, enthusiastic APs and an experienced school business manager, a new-look senior staff team of six. So in total, a mostly young, new, inexperienced team of 10 people with 8 in acting positions. I had more experience in leading leadership than the rest of my team combined, so it was a huge shift.
Yeah.
So at that time, you asked me what was in front of mine: deep breathing, digging deep and asking myself this question: what kind of leader do I need to be right here, right now, to take Brooks from good to great? I heeded Marshall Goldsmith's famous words: what got you here won't get you there. I knew that I needed to lead boldly, unashamedly and positively from the front. Now, I felt a bit like Napoleon Bonaparte, you know, flying the flag and leading the troops, you know, flying the Brooks flag loudly and proudly. It was necessary to enroll the leaders and the team in a new vision. You know, in that vision was that we too can be remarkable, that we can sustain our amazing data sets and continue this upward trajectory. Why should we just accept that we won't be as good as what we have been, that we can be who we need for our staff, our young people and families, and we can guarantee 1 year's growth for 1 year's learning? And one of my favourite things is when we collectively believe as a staff that we can accomplish great things, we can and we will. And that's one of John Hattie's highest effect sizes of 1.57. So enrolling my team in a vision of our most positive potential was my next big deep breathing moment. It was clear as daylight that the school year needed to start by revisiting school culture and school climate, being really specific about their importance and impact on both staff and student wellbeing. I knew also from Peter Drucker's, I'm not sure if I've pronounced that right, famous words, the culture strategy for breakfast, and the importance of capturing the hearts and minds of staff, engaging them in the why, which are the things that at Brooks we hold with conviction and will fight for. So my first day of PL as principal, I had every single member of staff at the school present: teachers, teacher assistants, admin staff, canteen staff, cleaners, groundspeople, lab tech. There were over 70 people there. It was another deep breathing moment, Richard, to be fair. This was a small part of what I said to staff on that day. And I have a leadership journal, which I capture all my thinking. And this is what I said to my staff on that day. And I'm going to share this with you, so I think it's really important. I want to be principal of a school where there is a culture of caring and connection, where you are thriving, not surviving, where your work is valued and appreciated, where we celebrate our wins and cherish and nurture our teachers and students, We have high staff well-being and where you see the golden thread of potential in every single young person, where we get a minimum of 1 year's growth for 1 year's learning through a culture of high expectations, where there is trust, respect, integrity, clarity, loyalty and fun, and where obligation is replaced by pride. Let's love our school, as parents and students won't love our school until we love it first. The next day, there was a poster on my desk that one of the staff had created. It read, "Thriving, not surviving. These are the adventures of Team Brooks, boldly going where no school has gone before." This poster is now everywhere in our school, and it sums up our positive and special school. I knew then that I captured the hearts and minds of my people. It was a very humbling moment. At our next staff meeting, I asked the question, if we're to retain and build upon this culture and climate, what are the behaviours, actions and standards of communication that we need to uphold? This led to the creation of our Brooks High Staff Norms, yet another poster that's sitting very proudly next to the Thriving, Not Surviving. So an awesome start, but my next level of work was to build the capacity of my new team of leaders so we could achieve this vision together. I needed to help them understand leading and leadership. So I reached out to the one person who I knew was an expert in this field, and that was Di.
Fantastic. As you go through the detail of that, Louise, that's definitely a Napoleon moment. Just when you're sharing what you shared with the staff, you know, and it genuinely is. It's inspiring. Because the first thing you said when you took over that role, inheriting that school, it was a gift. And many's a one could just have sat back, rest on your laurels, and things will keep ticking over. You know, we've got a great school. It's been great for years. Why would it change? But yet, and with all, you asked the question, and I think our leaders and certainly our aspiring leaders should listen in. You asked the question, what kind of leader do I need to be? Not what kind of leader am I at the moment? And you qualified that by using that quote, you know, what got you here won't get you there. So you were very quick to realise it wasn't a matter of just rinse, repeat. Just keep doing exactly the same things as we've been doing, because you alluded to the fact that you had a new team. And again, you know, some folks who may be slightly less experienced, but still very, very keen and had an appetite, you know, to move Brooks from good to great. So I just love that idea of asking yourself the question. I mean, how many times do our listeners, and I'm asking myself as well, ask ourselves, what kind of leader do I need to be? You know, think in future tense. So I think that's fantastic. And yes, you mentioned then bringing Di back into the equation. So Di, if I can come back to you again, Louise contacted you then, it was about May time 2024, to come and work with her team of leaders. And these are leaders now that she has more experience in them all put together. I'd love to hear what drew you to get involved again in Louise's work. Remember, we've had a long period then where the cross or the paths really haven't crossed. From your perspective, what appealed to you about the situation Louise found herself in when she took over the acting head role at Brooks High in early 2024?
Well, to be absolutely and totally honest, my initial response would have to be described as reserved but curious. Now, the reservation wasn't anything to do with Louise. It was about me, because I had been, you know, while I'd done much work on leadership and had a whole strand of that in the work that I'd done since, you know, I'd left, you know, the system of being a school principal and so on, it wasn't that. It was just the fact that I had reached the stage where I wasn't doing large workshops anymore. I was backed out of the work I'd done on leadership, and, you know, I was kind of withdrawing to primarily working on my coaching and coach supervision. However, I was really curious, because, and open. So I listened to what she had to say, what she just essentially told you where Brooks was at. And partly it was helped because I knew about the school's success, because the past principal whom Louise has talked about, you know, somebody I know very well. So that kind of kept, you know, was where my curiosity was. But the more I listened to her, I was attracted to her clear and compelling vision about the leadership that she wanted, you know, needed she knew needed to be developed for the school. And I was attracted too to the affirmation that she saw, you know, that she saw that I could contribute. And so that was very attractive to hear somebody saying, you know, talking through ideas and I seeing how what I know and understand was could be supportive and her, you know, reaching out in that way. So that was an affirming kind of thing that made me perhaps think twice. And I was really hooked by the way she saw her people, that way she was invested in their success. So all of that kind of drew me in to being open to it and being attracted to the idea. And also I have to confess to the fact that there was a personal sentiment involved as well, because Brooks High is the school where I began my career and revisited it again as a middle level leader at a stage in my journey. So it's kind of one of those places that I'd always had a little bit of an ear to what's going on there. So that kind of got into the mix as well. But it was really about her vision and the way she saw her people and what was the really interesting potential there and the characteristics of her, that she wasn't just interested in having me be a consultant to come in and deliver something and disappear, that she was interested in a kind of like a partnership that would evolve between us and how we could work together. So that was attractive as well. Yeah.
Fantastic. And it certainly has, you know, been a fantastic partnership. It was almost like a renewal of the partnership again after that period of those 15, 16 years. I love your initial response, Di, reserved but curious. I think that's just fantastic. But again, you know, to bring it down to the finer point, Louise had a clear and compelling vision. And that's something that, you know, all good leaders need to have, particularly, you know, when facing a period of significant change. Louise, starting in February 2024, you had led a very concerted effort to build the capacity of your new team leaders, culminating in the creation of the Brooks Leadership Way of Being document. This will intrigue listeners. You reconnected with Di, as we've heard, convinced her to lead some of the professional leadership for your team. That was key to the crafting of this leadership way of being. Okay, so your team also developed powerful collective agreements to each other. The approach you took resulted in this document, which was deeply rooted in trust, self-coaching, and emotional intelligence. Can you share with us what led to its creation and why these four elements felt essential?
Look, when we appoint leaders, we are guided by the words knowledge, skills, experience, and potential. Generally speaking, my new team of leaders, they were filled to the brim and overflowing with potential, but with developing skills and limited knowledge and experience in building teams and leading in leadership. What I had was their united loyalty, trust and commitment, and their belief in our collective efficacy. You know, I felt very privileged and fortunate, but knew without a shadow of a doubt that to take Brooks from good to great, first and foremost, we had to build their individual and team capacity, needing to build them up, give them the resources, authority and responsibility to achieve. Now, their capacity to achieve was going to be determined by my ability to empower. So my first step was to do a PL audit, needing to know, you know, what had they been exposed to in leading and leadership? And it was minimal, but that was okay. But at least I knew where the starting point was. So I created two streams of professional reading from the start of the year, an hour every fortnight. I had a stream at leadership level, which is a principal, school business manager and APs, and at senior staff level, which is middle leaders. So at the leadership level, we read Lencioni's Four Obsessions of an Extraordinary Executive. Every week we would read a few chapters and engage in a protocol. It says, I say, and so. Oh, we loved engaging with this text. I loved Rich and his little yellow sticky notes. For those who haven't read it, you need to get in there and do yourself a favour, as Molly Meldrum would say. And the key, some of our key summary of the takeouts, you know, was being humble, hungry and smart was one of the favourite sayings from that book that we have. My wall in my office is plastered with the artifacts of our learning. At senior staff level, we read Lencioni's other famous text, The Five Dysfunctions of a Team. And we engage with the same protocol. Some of our key learnings were the importance of engaging in productive, constructive conflict. And what I really encouraged was don't give us artificial harmony, because I was so much older. They saw me a bit like Yoda, you know, and I didn't want them just agreeing with everything that I was saying and doing because they saw me as the Jedi Knight, you know. So don't give me artificial harmony. We learned about the value of cascading messages, you know, the core messages that we need to repeat consistently, repeatedly over time and in multi modes. It was then that I reached out to Di via email. I wanted someone with high credibility and experience to engage my team and me in further deep dive into the art of leadership, you know, that would complement our professional reading, and someone who had such high credibility. I knew Di was a lead coach consultant with Growth Coaching International, but I didn't really know what she'd been doing in those years, but I knew it was linked to growth coaching. It had been well over 10 years since we had last connected, and that first Zoom conversation, just to see her face and hear her voice, it was such a wonderful moment. She told me, "But I don't do this work anymore, Louise." I was completely crestfallen. You know, Di was the right person. I needed her not only to deliver professional learning, but to be a critical friend, coach and colleague, and to support me in realising this compelling vision I had for Brooks. You know, it was in my head. I needed to bring it to life. And working with Di, I knew that I could do that. Anyway, I must have convinced Di, thankfully. She joined us and delivered two very powerful sessions on leading and leadership that were so aligned with our work. She engaged us with readings and spent considerable time on the importance of trust and Paul Browning's work on compelling leadership. She also introduced Daniel Goleman's seminal work on emotional intelligence. And this was then followed by three space sessions of the fundamentals of coaching delivered by the Growth Coaching International to my entire team. I was worried at that time. I was pushing too hard. You know, my foot was firmly on the accelerator. You know, I had this goal, you know, to bring this 7-8 months of intensive new learning and group of new leaders together to craft a document that would describe our way of working as leaders at Brooks. In September, so it wasn't long ago, we did this huge brain dump of everything we learned. Such a large piece of butcher's paper. It was covered in so much writing. We then culled by combining similar themes and messages. Our final act together was to take all these key takeouts and put them in categories and to give the categories a heading. And it's those headings that are at the heart of the leadership way of being: trust, self, coaching, and emotional intelligence. So at the center of that document are the words, "As leaders at Brooks High School, we will show trust, have a strong sense of self, use the language of coaching to bring about positive change, use our emotional intelligence to strengthen our relationships." The power of this document, Richard, lies in the words that sit underneath each of those headings. For example, under trust, this is just one example, we are honest, genuine, selfless, consistent, and show integrity in our relationships with others. And each of those headings has multiple of these statements underneath them that come from the language of my people. Then underpinning this document are our collective agreements to each other as leaders. And I'm going to give a couple of examples. The senior staff is our number one, and our loyalty and commitment to this team is absolute. We live and breathe our Brooks mantras. So as a bit of a side, Brooks has these mantras that we hold really dear. So, for example, Brooks is a place of peace. Equity is not a dream. Everyone is welcome. And we live and breathe those every day. We speak with one voice to staff around agreed decisions, acknowledging that consensus is not always possible. The majority rules is accepted gracefully. And I love this one. We celebrate our thriving moments and support each other in our surviving moments. Couldn't be prouder of my team and our leadership way of being and the collective agreements. It's a mind-blowing synopsis of our learnings and thinking. And I'm mindful of Paul Kelly, a famous Australian singer, songwriter, and his lyrics, from little things, big things grow, very badly sung. But, so who would have thought that from a cast of actings at the beginning of the year, myself included, and such immense leadership churn from 20 to 23, 24, we will be where we are now. It's all rather remarkable, Rich.
I think it's all rather remarkable is probably the understatement of the year, Louise. I think that's just fantastic. And I think that's the first person we've had actually singing on a podcast episode before. So we're breaking new ground left, right and centre here. One of the things that really comes through to me, Louise, when you're chatting through that, and in your words, you know, an intense period, is that it's very much a team effort. So this is put together by everyone. And, you know, even just the idea, picking just on one thing there of a team, a senior leadership team, middle leadership team reading through a particular book. I mean, I think that's terrific. You know, on a regular, consistent basis, what have you got out of this? What can we have up on the wall? And then what can we actually live by, you know, living this out? And Lencioni's books obviously are fantastic for that. But just that idea of a whole team coming together, you know, on a regular basis to try and learn together is a great example, not just for the rest of the staff, but for the whole school, for the young people in the school building as well. Di, if I can come back across to you, from your perspective, and you're listening into this, you know, why do you feel this intense period of team development has been working so well?
Look, there are so many dimensions to this, some so obvious, some so nuanced. It's really very hard to capture them all. And I know I can't capture them all now. So the ones that are perhaps the more standout. First of all is trust. And I put that, like I have it in my mind, trust and an exclamation mark, because Louise signals trust in everything she does. She's an equal participant in everything. So we're going to practice something. I'm in there practicing it with you. We're going to seek feedback. I'm seeking feedback too. So, and she's wholehearted in that, and she makes it, you know, authentically, it's just obvious to everybody that she is participating too. And if she's doing it, well, we're doing it. Leaders see themselves now as learners. So this is a mental model that they hold. So Louise is lead learner and simultaneously guide and teacher. And she has such a subtle and nuanced way of being those things, because she's not telling people what to do. She is being there beside them. And I receive, for example, all the emails that she sends her senior staff. And so I get to witness the way she goes about doing things. So they have collaborative conversations, but just the way she sums things up for them in an email, it's there, you know, creating the collective understanding or summarizing it. But there are little tips in there about how to go about doing things. So there's always that ongoing support. It's a very, very sophisticated in the way she works. Everything is seen as an opportunity for learning about themselves, about others, how to engage others to become successful in whatever role they have. But it's not only learning about kind of like new knowledge. Learning is also focused on how do we embed new skills? You know, what are the strategies that are going to help us be the way we want to be? She creates collaborative opportunities to explore ideas and to create representations of their learning, like these posters and things that she's mentioned. You know, everything is visual, and the process in and of itself prepares her leaders to be able to do the work that they go off and do in their own roles. You know, it's helping them see the way they can be. She understands that creating the leadership way of being, you know, the whole process and the artifact that has come, that's not the end point. That's just a vehicle to get to be the way we want to be, as significant it is, and it has to live. And so now she's focused on the work that is required to transfer that understanding into practice. so that it becomes embedded in the practice of each leader and is understood by the staff. They can see it as well. So it's all about a vision of leadership they aspire to, developing that within them. And I'll leave it to Louise later on. She'll explain the kind of the processes that are going to be in place to make that transfer possible. And another characteristic too that's making this work so well is that because Louise is open, she then is open to me as a partner and as a challenge partner, not to like challenge her ideas, but to offer stretch provocations and, you know, that challenge her thinking and stretch her. And so she realizes too that she needs accountability. And so, you know, the conversations we have give her an opportunity to reflect, to deepen her thinking. But there's something more. Sometimes I wonder, you know, whether Louise actually realizes how ahead of the curve she is in her practice as a leader. You know, I recently heard a reputable thinker and researcher on leadership say that change is in the relationships. It's how we be in the work of leadership that is significant. It's in how leaders interact that enables change. It's through the relationships and connections leaders create with their people that change and thus leadership occurs. And I think this is probably best said by one of my favourites, Patrick Doignan, who's a Irish, Richard, but he worked here at the Catholic University in Australia. And he said this, leadership begins with being present to your people. Being present builds relationship. In relationship, there is influence, and influence is leadership. No presence, no relationship. No relationship, no influence. No influence, no leadership. And that is the effective leadership that I see at Brooks and being embodied in their leadership way of being. And how that is enacted will be the really exciting, you know, next stage of the journey.
Yeah, and it is. I mean, we're at a very, very exciting stage. Louise, I mean, listening back to that, I mean, that's, and thanks, Di, for sharing those thoughts with us. How, Louise, are you going to, you know, embed this newly crafted, we talk about this leadership way of being document, into daily practice with your leaders at Brooks High?
Oh, that's a big question. You know, we had developed together this robust, compelling and powerful document of which we're all justifiably very proud. You know, the next layer of work is to live it as leaders. You know, we had also just completed the fundamentals of coaching workshop, and we did that together as a whole team. Even though I'm an accredited coach and I had another person who'd also done lots of coach, we actually sat with our team and did that together. And so my team needed to practice their coaching skills in a safe and supportive environment, developing their competence and confidence. Working with Di, we came up with a plan to help embed this work or to have it sit. We know that trust is one of the foundation stones of our leadership way of being. And Di, in her leadership session, had provided a rubric from Dr. Paul Browning. And each member of the senior staff team had asked their direct line manager and two colleagues for feedback on that rubric. The second step was the person being coached had to analyse their feedback from the trust rubric and come up with a stretch goal to thrash through in that coaching session. Then Di and I, we put all the leaders into coaching triads. So over the course of this 5-6 week period, which we're in now, there were three roles, observer, coach and coachee, which rotated. So everyone got to experience being each of those roles, and we gave them clear guidelines and around what they had to do in each of those roles. So each session ran 40 minutes, 20 minutes of coaching and 20 minutes of discussion and reflection. Observer gave constructive feedback to the coach on their use of the growth framework and the key coaching skills that the coach was displaying of listening, paraphrasing and questioning, because they're the hard things. The coachee then had to describe and share the benefits for them of the coaching experience And the coach then also shared any challenging or key moments. As I said, this was repeated, so everyone had had a crack. So the purpose of this was multi-layered. It was them making themselves vulnerable and open to receiving feedback. And what I did, I actually gave that rubric to every single member of my team. And then I also then collated and shared that feedback with all my staff so that they could see that as well. Because I think you have to model work you want to see. So they sought feedback on trust. And then they're also, through the triads, learning how to coach, but also at the same time experiencing what it's like to be coached, because that's moving into what we're going to do into 2025. And they were building connections with each other. So in those triads, I deliberately mix them so that they're working with leaders who they don't normally work with. So to actually grow a connection. So the 7-year ASTs working with a 1-year 10, for example. So, and that was done quite strategically to help them build relationships outside their normal daily work. So running parallel to this work is a co-development of our roles and responsibilities document. So these documents, where I was described the roles of middle leaders and assistant principals in schools, they're usually, Richard, just a list, you know, for example, reporting, transition, attending, attendance, managing student behaviour. Our roles and responsibilities document's not going to look like that. Our roles and responsibilities document has to align with our fundamental beliefs and our way of being. So we have three domains: instructional, operational, and relational. And as we know, if you don't have the relational, that is the key work, working through your people. You can have a list of, you've got to do transition and attendance, but if you don't have the people skills and the way of being and the language to bring that to life, you may as well pack your bags and go home. So we at the moment are currently typing up that document under each of those domains, but the relational domain is the most important one. And Di is working alongside us with this as consultant and coach.
I think that word relational has come through many, many times, even just those last couple of questions. And obviously it's a key way that you folks operate at Brooks High. And in summary, Louise, you've built the capacity of a newly minted team of leaders through job-intensive, high-quality professional learning that has resulted in your leadership way of being document, which sounds just tremendous. Your team are busy now practicing, as you've explained, and growing their skills as coaches. So the big question remains, where is the work going to take you to in 2025?
Well, that's a big question. just beyond excited for the next part of this journey, Richard. Like 2024 has been about creating the preconditions for developing Brooks as a true feedback culture. And we need to have a feedback culture to take Brooks from good to great. So staff have shared for many, many years through annual department satisfaction surveys that they would like to receive useful feedback on their work. So I've listened to that. But to be successful in providing feedback, we firstly need to understand, well, what do our staff actually mean by feedback? Because what I've got in my head, my hunch is not what they've got in theirs. And we need to together co-create a shared process for providing this feedback in a safe environment. So one of our school improvement plan goals is improving student cognitive engagement through pedagogical practice. So most students in schools tend to be compliant as opposed to engaged. And there's a statistic around that 70% of kids in classrooms are compliant. So we want to improve our students' cognitive engagement through improving the pedagogical practice we put in front of them. So it's our plan for our leaders to provide feedback to staff on observations grounded in pedagogical practice through learning walks. So in summary, building the capacity of this, my new team of leaders has been pivotal in taking Brooks from school from good to great. The way we work with our staff, the language we use, our communication, our body language are all essential in setting the tone and culture of our school. Our way of being document is our commitment to staff about what they can expect from us. And that's really important, to be predictable so they know what they can expect from us. And the collective agreements are our commitment to each other as leaders. So we need to keep tight our engagement with our leadership way of being document so it's enacted by all leaders. And to do that, we must be coherent in our behaviour so the staff understand and have surety about the way we lead. And transferring new learning into practice requires structured support. To truly embed this, we're going to need to continue our work with Di's consultant and coach. She's become so invested in our journey as well, which has been great. But her wisdom, experience and knowledge in this space are unparalleled. So as a result, to help this transference of learning, all our leaders are going to have individual coaching next year in 2025. And it was only when I sat and wrote and thought about this that I reflected, oh my God, Louise, you've come full circle. What I mean by that is the work that I have felt absolutely compelled to do with my new leaders as principal has been shaped by the most impactful experience I have had in my leadership journey. They have had the most intense crash course ever. So what this means, we are now all singing from the same songbook. We have a blueprint in our leadership way of being document, which has been collaboratively developed, which describes not just our core values and beliefs about leading, but defines the how we will lead. And it also encompasses our commitments to each other. So I just feel so incredibly blessed and privileged to have this team. And at the beginning of the year, we talked about taking Brooks from good to great and sustaining and growing our data sets. I believed in our most positive potential, providing hope and a vision. Our annual data dump has just happened. So all our staff satisfaction and wellbeing surveys, family and student satisfaction surveys, as well as reading and maths data, every grade. The goal at the start of the year was to at least sustain that. We have soared. We haven't just sustained, Richard. We have soared. We've been mind blown by the data sets that we have back. You know, equity is not a dream for our young people here at Brooks High School. I'm going to go as far as to say that when our young people attend Brooks for a minimum of 70% attendance, they get a minimum of 1 year's growth for 1 year's gain. And the kids who've been with us from grade 7 through grade 8, grade 9 and 10 and have sat every test, their results are above Australia. Above Australia. Just let that sit for a school in the bottom 9th percentile of Australia for disadvantage. The kids who are with us all the time at 10 come out above Australia for reading and maths. So we have had such impressive growth. So the challenge, Richard, is to keep it going. I know we can. Me and my newly team of leaders, we've got this.
I love it. It is such a tremendous story, Louise. And 2025 is just going to be bigger and better. I genuinely just so appreciate, you know, your time today and Di as well. I mean, this has been such an inspiring conversation. Louise, I really appreciate your honesty and sharing your story. I think that's really important, particularly in those early days. Really appreciate it. And our listeners will appreciate that as well. Both you and Di have shown us the impact of intentional, values-driven leadership and the role that coaching can play in shaping school culture. Louise, as you and your team at Brooks High move forward, your commitment to continuous improvement is inspirational and a great example for leaders everywhere. For our listeners, I'm sure you are equally challenged and enthused from listening to Louise and Di share this incredible story. As always, if you're interested in learning more about the work of Growth Coaching International and what we can offer you by the way of support, advice or training, please do check out our website, growthcoaching.com.au, and I look forward to joining you all again on the next episode of Coaching in Education, where theory and good intentions meet reality.